problems. It's human nature to hate problems. But why is that? After all, problems inspire us to mend things, bend things, make things better. That's why so many people work with IBM on everything, from city traffic to ocean plastic, new schools to new energy, flight delays to food safety. Smart loves problems. IBM. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/smart/UK to learn more.
No!
Okay, and are you ready for the show?
Yay, we're ready, Lucy. Please start.
And so I started.
I'm Bert Kreischer, and you're listening to the Homemade Broadcast.
Personnel, this is CVTS. Space vehicle pre-count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It is the Homemade Broadcast, HMB Radio, on RadioSt.Pete.com. My name is Will Koontz. Very happy to be back with you again. It's been a good week. We recorded a City Hall broadcast today. Kevin King, Ben Kirby, and myself, the official podcast of the City of St. Petersburg. If you haven't checked it out yet, make sure you do. It's available at City Hall, CityHallBroadcast.net. And you can find, and remember, it's .net, not .com. So I don't know what's at cityhallbroadcast.com. Never looked. Don't even bother. Just go check out cityhallbroadcast.net. We had the sustainability manager, whose name, Miss Wright, Sharon Wright. The sustainability manager talked about climate change. We talked about sustainability, green energy that the city of St. Petersburg is utilizing. So make sure you check that out, a Radio St. Pete exclusive at cityhallbroadcast.net. Today on the show, we have Lisa Unger. Lisa is a New York Times best-selling author who happens to live in the Tampa Bay area and was nice enough to come by and chat with me this evening. She has a new book that's out right now called The Red Hunter. It's available on Amazon. Wherever you get books, you can pretty much get this thing at this point. I'll put a link in the description as well if you want to buy it there. If you aren't subscribed yet, why not? It's really easy. You can keep up to date with all things St. Petersburg that are going on here in this fine town of ours, fine city, fine state. Just search for HMB Radio Tampa Bay on your iTunes, your Stitcher. I got it's in the description there if you're listening on hmbradio.com/listen. And you can subscribe on your phone and take it on the go, listen on demand. It's good for that, you know. Also, make sure you follow our Facebook page, HMB Radio on Facebook, and then you can also follow Radio St. Pete while you're there. Radio STPETE, Radio St. Pete is also on Instagram and Twitter. You can follow them there. Just same thing, Radio St. Pete, making it very easy for you. Me, I'm a little more difficult. Home_made_man. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter. I want to say thank you very much to our sponsors here. We could keep going, but it really helps, you know, me having these people around it. I certainly do appreciate them. And I want you to check them out because they are fine folks. All these people are friends of mine. And that's the nice thing about this is that I believe in what they're doing, so I'm not just reading something from a script here. These are people that I know do good work and will serve you well. Tap House 61, formerly Sly Bar, no more. It's now Tap House 61. It's completely redone inside. Joe did a fantastic job with it. It's beautiful in there. 2061 Central Avenue here in St. Petersburg. Tap House 61, the numbers 61.com. Make sure you go check them out. Chrissy Parker and Truvi Salon and Spa, You can find them at truvysalonandspa.com. And that's T-R-U-V as in Victor, Y, salonandspa.com. You can schedule an appointment over there, or you can call 727-329-9751. And she is located at 8908 4th Street North, Unit B here in St. Petersburg. I want to say thank you very much to Cal Patel and Florida Patel Law Group. You can find him at flpatellaw.com. If you've ever been thinking about starting a small business, Cal's a guy to talk to. He's really helped me out a lot with my homemadepodcast.com that we're starting the podcast consulting firm. And he's kind of gave me the idea for it. We're just kind of hanging one day and then gave me all these cool ideas of, you know, tax breaks that I can do and all this cool stuff. So you can make an appointment with him at 727-279-5037 or check out flpatellaw.com. And finally, my friend Christine at K9 Holistics. She speaks dog, folks. That's what she says. And she's going to make your dog behave. And she does it in a way, it's not just dog training. She teaches you how to speak dog. So make sure you check her out, K9Holistics.com. It's a free consultation with her as well. And she does good, fine work. I've seen her. I've seen the dogs that she's worked with in person, and they're good. They're much, much better behaved. So I can tell you from experience, she does fine work over there. So I wanted to talk about this thing that I saw. I got into a little spat with the Tampa Bay Times' own SJW himself, Mr. Tom W. Jones over there. Tom, I've grown up reading Tom. I think he's a good writer. But, God, it just can't leave well enough alone. This one was about, I guess there was an incident with John McEnroe. Said that Serena Williams is the best female tennis player in the world. Now, what's wrong with that? Nothing is wrong with that. But some stupid NPR host asked him to clarify what he meant by that. Tom makes the case that sometimes it's better to be nice than honest. And so McEnroe was on NPR and to talk about his book. And during the interview, NPR host Lulu Garcia Navarro asked McEnroe why he would qualify his statement that Serena was the best female tennis player in the world. And McEnroe said that if she played on the men's circuit, she would be like 700 in the world. So people got upset, asked him to apologize. And McEnroe said, I think she's an incredible player. Don't get me wrong here. And, you know, praised her for being the best female player. So this is not about, Tom says, if this is a true statement or not. But, I mean, it kind of is, right? I mean, there is objective truth in the world, right? And why don't we just ask Serena Williams? We can do that through this technology called YouTube. She did an interview with David Letterman back in 2013. What does she say about it? Let's find out.
Women's tennis are completely almost two separate sports. So I'm like, if I were to play Andy Murray, I would lose 6-0, 6-0 in 5 to 6 minutes, maybe 10 minutes. Because it's a completely different sport. The men are a lot faster, and they serve harder, they hit harder. It's just a different game. And I love to play women's tennis, and I only want to play girls because I don't want to be embarrassed. I would not do the tour. I wouldn't do Billie Jean any justice. So Andy, stop it.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna let you kill me.
So there you go. I mean, Serena nailed it on the head. She knows, she understands simple biology, and you know, this stuff where, you know, it's apples and oranges. It's not, you know, that's not the point. He should have just said she's a great player. She's achieved a lot. That's not what the NPR lady asked. She asked him to qualify the statement, and he did. And this thing that women can't handle criticism, it's treating them like babies. I mean, come on, man. So, Tom, I think you're wrong. He even says in the article, look, you might see this as a silly non-story, a dumb argument, and the PC police run amok. You nailed it, Tom. You nailed it right there. You should have just stopped there. I know he's a columnist and he's entitled to his opinion, but geez, man, come on. There are objective truths in the world. And he was asked a question and he answered it. And I know you think he could have gave a better answer, but are we really going to pick apart people like this? I mean, it's silly. And it's there's this myth out there that, you know, like I said, things are objectively true. I remember fighting with a friend of mine, a lady friend of mine, during the Ladies World Cup when we were watching. And she said, now she denies this now, by the way, but she said that she would at least give the men a run for their money, the men's national team. No, the men are so much faster, so much stronger. It would be a bloodbath. And I just saw this article from April that they played the women's national team scrimmage with the, I think it was the 15 and under boys. Now, these are the best 15-year-olds in the country, but the boys mopped the floor with them. It was like 7-2 or something like that. So, I mean, I'm sorry. Things are just objectively true in this world, and we have to face realities. He didn't trash Serena Williams at all. He was asked to qualify his statement, and he did. And, you know, Tom feels the need to go ahead and pick him apart and said, what did he say is the better answer would be there? Oh, he said, good point. I think you can put her career, all her accomplishments, all her titles, all she's done, and make the claim that she has had a career that rivals anyone, male or female, who has ever played the game. Okay, I guess, but she that would have just been a cop-out. It's a silly answer, and that's not what the NPR lady asked. So he answered her question. He refuses to apologize, and I think McEnroe is right. He shouldn't have to apologize. It's stupid. Like I said, Tom, you nailed it. You might see this as a silly non-story, a dumb argument, and a PC police run amok. So, Tom, you know, maybe you'll come on and talk to me about it one day. We can have a nice discussion. We didn't really get in a spat. I don't fight with people on Twitter. It's dumb. And yeah, that bugged me. That was the thing of the week. We just got to pick apart everything now. We just can't live and let live anymore. Everybody's got to be perfect all the time. Stupid. All right, folks, let's talk to Lisa Unger. She is the author of The Red Hunter, available now on Amazon, wherever books are sold, this week on The Homemade Broadcast here on Radio St. Pete.
I'm ready.
All right, let's do this thing. Lisa Unger, welcome to the program. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
I hope you weren't taken aback by pulling up to some creep's apartment and doing a radio program.
No, not at all. Why would that take me aback?
She goes, I thought you had like a studio. I'm like, oh, I have a studio in my apartment.
Yeah.
She's
in my
like,
apartment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Good.
Yeah, we're all good now.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I appreciate you coming on. You're here promoting your new book, The Red Hunter.
Yes.
And this is your 14th book?
It's my 15th.
15 books. My
15
gosh.
15 novels. Yeah.
How many books do you put out a year?
One a year. I do about one a year.
How long does it take? But there's like a process with that year. It's not just writing. It's like, or is it just the writing and then you kind of worry the other people have, like, you know, do the rest of the stuff?
Yeah, well, actually, so it's about 9 to 12 months for a first draft. And that's just me writing. And then, of course, it gets turned into my publisher. And so there's an editorial process. And so from the time that it's turned in until the time that it hits the shelves, it's another year usually. So there's a long year of sort of editing, you know, rewriting, tuning up, fixing, fleshing out, cutting back, the whole thing. So it's a year of writing and a year of editing, and then finally it, you know, winds up on the shelves.
So, like, the actual writing is no big deal, but the other stuff, trimming it down and editing, that's probably the real, I mean, the brunt.
The actual writing is all of it, of course. I mean, that, you know, that the story all comes from me, and that's the craft and the joy, and then the rest of it is, this is another part of the creative process. I think that, you know, people maybe don't understand as much how collaborative the editorial process can be, because when you have a relationship with an editor you trust, that's the phase where it goes from being the best book you can write to hopefully being a little bit better than that. So it's all part of one big, long creative process, and every stage in the writing and editing is critical to the ultimate, you know, success of the book, I think.
Yeah, I it looks so intimidating. You know, I guess everybody thinks about, yeah, maybe I'll write a book. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll, you know, and then you sit down at that computer and you look at a book and there's, you know, hundreds of pages here. It just seems so daunting to do. It's such an undertaking. You have to really be brave, I think, to even bother.
Yeah, and I think part of it, too, is that writers maybe are born and not made necessarily. I mean, you do, as a professional writer, you do hear that a lot from people. Like, they say, I always wanted to write a book, but I just never found the time, as if, you know, that's all it takes is
right.
a little bit of extra time.
Yeah.
And it's such a weird thing to hear because you think, my gosh, you know, this is the only thing I've ever wanted to do. I've been a writer all my life. You know, the act of writing a novel is, you know, a year, 2 years of, you know, intensive, like, sort of, you know, love and work and pouring your heart and your soul into something. And it's not just a matter of having a little extra time. I think most writers are readers first, of course. You know, that's where we fall in love with some, you know, with story, with the power of the written word. And then for writers, I think there's usually a palpable moment, you know, early in your life where you feel like, I can do this too. I want to do this. And then it's not just that. It's, I need to do this. This is what I am. And so for me, that's very much the experience. So I don't really have an idea of myself as being anything else. My daughter is 11 years old, and she's been writing since she was 8, and she's an artist, and she's like that creative spirit. And I feel like in her, I see what I was at that time. So I don't think it's a choice. Writing doesn't feel like a choice. It feels like, you know, who I am.
So how do you start to write? I mean, what did you start writing? You didn't start with books. I mean,
No, of course not. Yeah, early on, it was poetry. I mean, I think most people find,
yes,
you know, their way.
I have some embarrassing books of poetry that I wrote.
So do I.
Yeah.
It's definitely, you know, that's sort of, I think, the gateway to, you know, creative writing for most young people. And then for me, it was on to sort of short stories, you know, and then throughout school, you know, I loved writing essays. So, like, it was just the way I expressed myself. And then I went to college in New York City. I went to the New School for Social Research. And while I was there, I studied everything from journalism to playwriting, you know, to novel writing. And, you know, so it was a real journey for me. And I spent, you know, a lot of time writing different kinds of things until I sort of found my voice in the novel. And I started my first novel when I was 19 years old. And that was, in fact, even though it was many years later, that novel was the first novel that I published. So I started my first novel when I was still in college.
So your genre is kind of like psychological thrillers.
Yes.
It seems like you have a passion and an interest in the psychological mind. Where did that kind of come from?
Well, I've always had just sort of this dark and kind of twisted imagination. You know, I'm just sort of, I kind of think of myself as a spelunker. You know, I try to shimmy into the dark places in the human psyche. I mean, for me, all of my books are about character. They're very character-driven. And, you know, my fascination as a writer is with people. You know, what makes us who we are? I have a lot of questions about things like nature versus nurture and identity and, you know, family and even gender. And, you know, what are the contributing factors to, you know, the people that we become? I mean, we all start off as one thing. We're all like, you know, a baby sitting in our diaper chewing on a set of plastic keys. So what happens? Like, what is the journey? How much of it is biological? And so that's my real fascination. And so the thriller, I think, or, you know, crime fiction or whatever we're calling it these days, that's for me the place where I most naturally sort of turn to try to explore those ideas and those concepts. And so every book for me is an exploration of, you know, an idea, a thought, a wondering that I have about something that fascinates me or a certain type of person. So that's kind of why, I mean, again, I don't know that I necessarily chose to write psychological thrillers any more than I chose to write in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there do you kind of have the broad story thought out already? Meaning, like, I have a beginning, middle, end, and then you kind of fill in the pieces there, or?
No. Actually, not at all. I usually just start my novel with it's usually a voice. It's one voice or multiple voices. And so kind of the way it works for me is the germ, like the seed for a novel, can come from almost anything. It can be a news story or a line of poetry, or in one case, it was even a piece of junk mail. And usually it just, I feel this kind of little buzz, this little tingle of excitement, like, okay, there's something here that's interesting me or fascinating me. And it may lead me to a swath of research. So I'll start researching a topic, and the best way I can express it is then if that connects with something larger that's going on within me, I start hearing a voice in my head, or it might be multiple voices. And so I kind of follow those voices through my narrative, whatever that story happens to be. I might have some kind of amorphous sense of what the book is, what it might eventually be about, but I do not have an outline. I don't know what's going to happen day to day. I don't know who's going to show up or what they're going to do, and I certainly don't know how the book is going to end. So every novel is just me sort of exploring character and figuring out what's going on in the lives of these people and where it's going to come out.
So that's kind of a myth then, because I've heard you need to like have it planned out, some sort of loose construction at the very least.
Well, I mean, there are people who write that way. I mean, there are certainly, and I think you find that there are two very distinct camps of writers. There are people who outline, you know, in a very detailed way. They have, you know, beginning, a middle, and end, not only that, but also character sketches, themes, you know, so there are people that write that way, and there are many, many successful people that write that way. And then there are plenty of people who write like I do, who just have this kind of idea, these voice. And the one difference that I've found in, you know, my many years of doing this and talking to other authors and stuff is that people who write like me, who have been writing all their lives, people that write like with an outline usually come to it later in life from other professions. And I don't think there's a right way or a wrong way to do it, because certainly both of those groups have, you know, many, many successes. But, you know, I think that those of us that have been writing, you know, since we were kids, like part of us just, you know, never grew up, you know, like that kid's desire to kind of weave a story and tell a story and bring it to life. You know, like there's like this pure, like sort of childish creativity in that process. And I think a lot of the people who write the way I do write from that place. Like we just have all these stories and we just want to tell them. And, you know, I think it works both ways. It's just a matter of how your brain works.
Right, right. Yeah. It seems like one of the major challenges with writing is continuity with your characters. Because, you start introducing these people in, and then you got to keep consistent on all this stuff.
Right.
How do you do that? That seems like a mind bender in its own right.
Well, I mean, I guess for me, it's not really, there aren't a whole lot of intellectual questions being asked when I'm writing. You know, I'm exploring characters, so I feel like when I stopped a long time ago thinking of characters as people that I'm creating and started thinking of them as people that I'm meeting. And I know that that is not exactly the way it is, because, of course, every character is, you know, an amalgamation of my imagination, my observations, my, you know, wonderings, my questions. Like, it's all part of, you know, my experience. It comes from, but for me, my process is very subconscious. So in a way, I'm feeling like I'm having a relationship with these people and that they're revealing themselves to me in the way any relationship would reveal itself to me. So it's not like, oh, I have to make sure it's consistent, or I don't want her to do this because she did this in this other chapter. Like, there was none of that thinking for me. It's just an evolution of character on the page, much the way, you know, it would be if I were reading it.
Right, 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 right. So you do martial arts, I heard.
I did, yeah.
Tell me about that.
It's funny. Well, this is actually kind of it's what I sort of talked about earlier about the seed or the germ. So this is the seed or the germ for the Red Hunter, but it was, you know, many, many years ago. And sometimes that happens. Sometimes it takes a long time for something to find its way on the page. But when I was in my 20s, I was living in New York City. I was working And I was in kind of a bad place. I had was just going through like an absolutely horrible breakup. I was, you know, had sort of, I was in this job that, you know, I was really good at, but I didn't love. And I had, you know, been sort of, I'd been writing all my life, but I was kind of writing in the margins of my life. I wasn't taking anything seriously. I wasn't taking my work seriously. I wasn't taking myself seriously. And so during this phase, I discovered this Kung Fu school in Manhattan on 26th Street, and I started studying Kung Fu. And it changed my life. It changed the way I felt about myself. It changed the way I thought about what I could do and what I couldn't do. And it was a huge evolution for me. And during the time I was studying Kung Fu, I finished my first novel. I met my husband, Jeff. Like, all these things sort of opened up in my life. And so I really sort of, you know, attribute a lot of the big changes that occurred in my life at that time to that process of discovery that took place for me when I was studying the martial arts. So then, you know, fast forward, I get pregnant, you know, get married, get pregnant, stop studying Kung Fu. I mean, I'm a mom. It's not really, it doesn't fit in anymore. All the time that, you know, you have to devote to things like that kind of goes away. And now my daughter is 11 and a half. And actually, this is a couple years ago now. And I started, you know, I took up kickboxing. You know, just as a, like with my trainer kind of a sure. thing, like not, yeah, yeah. you know, not studying it in any serious way. But it kind of reconnected me to that fighting self. You know, it reconnected me to that like sort of adrenaline burst that you get when you're, you know, when you're studying the martial arts. And it reconnected me to that space and time where I was back, you know, many years ago. And that was the germ for the Red Hunter.
Yeah, I kind of feel, I remember taking an intro karate class when I was a kid, and yeah. I really liked it.
Yeah.
And for some reason, my mom didn't do it. It really teaches you self-discipline.
It does.
And I think I would have been much better off with that in my life. And now that I'm older, I think about, like, now MMA is popular.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's two types of people in the world, ones who have gotten punched in the face,
yeah.
and ones who haven't.
Right.
And you can tell a lot about a person it's if they've really gotten true. Hit before.
It's so true. And learning to take a hit is a really critical part of, maybe it's a part of life, a really critical part of life, but it's also a very critical part of real martial arts training. It's like, that's one of the things you learn is how to get hit.
Yeah.
And, you know, because when you do get hit, the reaction in your body is, you know, it's tremendous. You know, it's a tremendous rush of
the
adrenaline.
Endorphin rush, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like you really, like, sort of have to learn how to deal with that. And so when you learn how to deal with, you know, that part of yourself, you know, what it means to be afraid, what it means to be full of adrenaline and be able to act anyway, like, when you learn those things about yourself, it teaches you about, you know, a lot of other things as well. So that's kind of what it was for me.
Yeah, no doubt. If I ever make some money, I'm going to take an MMA class where I have extra income to do that.
I suggest you go with Kung Fu.
Kung Fu?
Because that's a real martial arts training.
Do you get hit in Kung Fu, though?
Yeah, sure, you get hit in Kung Fu. Absolutely.
Have you ever thought about maybe when you were, like, doing a fight? You never, like, did, like, a competitive?
Just sparring in class, yeah.
That's good enough.
It's
That's
good
really
enough.
All you
yeah,
need.
Yeah, I mean, you don't really need to compete.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like a fun thing.
It is. It's a very interesting.
You've ever thought about picking it back up now? Or
I do sometimes think about it, yeah. But, you know, it's just like working and being a mom and, you know, just exercising in general, just all of that takes its time. And, my new kickboxing instructor, his wife just had a baby, so now he doesn't have any time. So we're trying to figure out how to get back into it.
Yeah, yeah, it's tough. I feel you.
Yep.
So the book is The Red Hunter. It's on. It's out now, right? It's on Amazon.
It's out now. Anywhere books are sold. That's right. Absolutely.
Very good. Very good. Have you ever gotten like an offer from one of your books? Like, hey, we want to make this into a movie.
Well, there have been options over the years, and there currently is an option for In the Blood.
Cool.
And so, but all that means is that somebody has the right now to make it into a movie. So
right,
now we just
right.
We'll just see what happens. It's a little bit vapor. I mean, as crazy as the publishing industry is, then Hollywood is even crazier. So we just kind of, you know, when an option comes in, it's always very exciting. And then, you know, sometimes maybe it'll come to pass and maybe it won't. So we're just going to, you know, wait and see on that one. But yeah, if you know anyone, give them a call.
I know. I'll keep my ears open though
for you. Yeah, keep your ears open. Do that.
If you had to pick somebody to play the lead role, and a movie that was made from your book, who would you choose?
Oh, I can't. I can't make it. That is such a hard question. I do get that question a lot, but I can't because every one of them is so
different.
Real.
Oh, okay.
To me, mm-hmm. like they're real people.
Do you have like a picture in your head of them?
Yeah.
You'd have to like look through pictures of.
And even that, it wouldn't be. It's sort of like the same thing with the, you know, when the audiobook comes. You know, or even before, sometimes the audio, before they record the audiobook, I'll get, you know, audio files from the readers, and often these days they're actors and actresses, and so it's like listening to those voices.
And that's not what you had in mind.
And going, I don't think that's right, or this sounds as close as I can get. And then a couple years ago, I wrote a book called Crazy Love You, and the protagonist was male. And he was my first person male protagonist. I've written other men before, but they've always been in the third person omniscient. And so it was interesting that when the reader came through, it was files from male actors, and I was like, oh, that's right, it's a male voice. So it was an interesting sort of disconnect for me when I started to hear the voice of, you know, this character in my head versus what was actually wound up on the audiobook. But it's a, you know, the world that I'm living in when I'm writing is very real. It's three-dimensional. There's, you know, sight and sound, and people are, you know, visually clear to me. So there's not, like, it would be difficult for me to pick who I would want.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
So you've lived, like, all over the world. You've lived in the States, you've lived overseas, and you, how did you end up in Florida?
Oh, well, that's interesting, because I had sort of, you know, this is part of that journey that started with the martial arts. When I studied the martial arts, it was the same time I thought, okay, I need to get serious about writing. You know, this is the only thing I've ever wanted to do. And I had, you know, this realization that, you know, if I didn't really focus on it, I was going to be 5 years, 10 years down the road thinking, you know what, you never even tried to do this. And I couldn't live with that. So I got very serious about it. I finished my first novel. And once I finished it, I was like, okay, this is an accomplishment. Now I really don't know what to do. I shelved it. And I wound up going on vacation to Key West. And while I was in Key West visiting a friend, we went to Sloppy Joe's.
Oh, and, yeah, I've been there. It's a fun bar.
And I met my husband.
Oh, no kidding.
He's sitting right here. Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
So it was really like kind of a, you know, a love at first sight Shazam moment for both of us. And he was living in Detroit at the time. I was living in New York City. And so I had just finished my first novel. And I was sort of like in that place of like, I don't know what's next. And then we met, and it was like this big, like sort of lightning bolt moment. And we just picked wherever he got the best job. And so that's how we wound up down here. And we've just, and that was actually 17 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so quite a long time. And we've been here ever since.
What's your favorite part about living in the Tampa Bay area?
Oh, it's the water. You know, of course.
Yeah.
You know, kayaking, boating, being on the water. Yeah, that's...
You know, I've lived here all my life. I don't really like the beach or
the
water.
You don't?
Nope. I like the mountains. I think it's one of those things.
Well, we like the mountains too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I like the beach. I'll go every once in a while, but I'm afraid of the water.
You are?
Yeah.
Oh, why?
I'm not afraid. No, I'll just take that back.
Okay.
I respect.
You respect
the water.
Well, you know what? It deserves your respect.
It certainly does.
That's for
and
sure.
they're you know, dolphins aren't crawling out of the water coming up here. I feel like I should leave their environment
alone.
That's
a thought. Yeah.
I just I had this experience. I remember swimming out to the sandbar to the buoy as a kid, and then saw this huge shadow just lurk underneath me, and it was like an 8-foot shark, probably just a sand shark, probably wouldn't hurt you. But I've never swam so fast to the shore, and ever since then. I did go to Key West, and I did do, my girlfriend at the time wanted to do the snorkeling thing, and I was like, really don't want to do this. But it was me and my buddy and his lady, so I wasn't going to let her go by herself, so I had to go.
You had to go. And what? How did you feel? Not good? Or
it was okay.
Can you swim? You can swim.
I can swim, yeah. The biggest pain for me was getting into the boat again. I'm just trying to get my chubby butt, push it up onto the boat like a beached whale. Like
you
a seal at SeaWorld.
You could get a ladder. Your boat didn't have a ladder.
I don't think they did. No, they did. I just couldn't get myself, because you had to go up backwards. I don't know. It was this whole big thing. It was really humiliating. But and I'm in this life jacket. But just squished it. It's really embarrassing. I think that was the last time I've been in the water.
And that was it.
That was it. Has your, like, where you lived, has that affected your writing at all?
Yeah, I mean, everything affects your writing. I mean, of course it does. But I, you know, for whatever reason, I wind up sort of, a lot of my books are set in a fictional town called The Hollows, which is an upstate New York-ish town. It doesn't exist, actually. And it's sort of my, you know, my brother always says, oh, this is totally the town where we, you know, went to high school in New Jersey. And it's not, of course, you know, may have some, you know, characteristics that are similar to that. But that, to me, is like sort of energetically the place where I go when I'm in my fiction. I go back north, which is where, you know, I guess I feel like it's always been, you know, the place I know best, in New York City. So a lot of my stuff is set there. I have one book, Blackout, which is set in Florida. And then, you know, slowly I find Florida starting to reach into my work. But, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, I had to leave New York before I started writing about it. So who knows? Maybe I have to leave Florida. And then
would you
want to
leave? Why would you want to leave Florida?
I would never want to leave Florida.
I don't know. I'm ready to get the heck out of here, frankly. I've had enough. I've been here 32 years.
32
now.
Years.
I mean, I feel like it's a cool place. Like, I feel like St. Pete especially is just really, like, happening town. Lots of things are happening. A lot of opportunities here that are cooking.
Sure.
But if I got a job, let's say, you know, hosting a morning show in Denver.
Yeah, that would
sounds
work for
good.
You.
Yeah,
that does sound nice
fun.
And cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I used to love the heat as a kid, but now I'm finding the older I get, I like a little bit cooler. Like, I think 55 at night, 72 during the day sounds
perfect. That sounds right. That sounds about right. I
think we might have to move to San Diego for that.
Yeah, maybe.
That's too expensive to live there. So tell me about the new book, The Red Hunter. What's it about? And
So The Red Hunter is the story of two women. They are both the victims of traumatic violent crime. And they have taken two very different paths after the incidents in their lives. Zoe Drake, she survived a terrible event in her childhood, and she turned to the martial arts after that event. And she has, through the martial arts, she feels that she has turned herself from a kitten into a dragon. And in this place of being the fighter, she has decided that she's found a way to move forward into her life, and she is looking for revenge on the people that hurt her and her family. Claudia is on another very different path. She's also survived a traumatic event, but she has started a blog, and she's working on sort of getting to a place of forgiveness and moving toward the light. And she's really looking to make herself whole again in a way that's a far more peaceful than maybe Zoe's ideas are. But so these women on two very different paths are about to converge at the same old farmhouse in New Jersey, and they're going to have to confront some demons that are common to both of them, and within and without.
Very good. And that's, you said it's out now. You can find it on Amazon,
wherever books are sold. Locally,
are there real bookstores anymore? Can you go into?
Of course, there are.
Okay.
Locally, here in St. Pete, there are a couple of really great bookstores, and also in Tampa, there's Inkwood Books.
Oh, very good.
Yep.
So we're going to do a lightning round, and we'll get you out of here. Favorite author? Your favorite author?
My favorite, like ever, like in the whole universe,
in the entire world.
Truman Capote.
So what's your second favorite?
Dennis Lehane.
Number three.
Karen Slaughter.
Oh, so you had that right at the top of your head. I thought you would have to think about it a little bit. What's the biggest piece of advice you would give to somebody who wants to write for a living?
Just write. That's it. You know, there's nothing you can do is going to make you a writer except writing. You don't need to talk about writing. You don't need to plan your book. You don't need to figure out what's going to happen when your book is done. You just need to write a great book. So the only way to do that is sit down and write.
I think you're right that people are born, not made. Because when you ask, when you hear about anybody, like I've heard Bill Burr, he's a comic, and people ask him all the time, how do you get started doing stand-up? He's like, you just got to do stand-up. And, you know, I do this radio thing. How do you do, you know, podcast? You just got to do it. I think you're right. You just got to find your way and find what you're good at.
Yeah, you just have to do it. I mean, that's 90% of it.
Very good. Lisa Unger, thank you very much for coming in. The book is The Red Hunter. It's available now. Make sure you go get it. I'll put a link in the description. I'll find it on Amazon. I'll just put it on there. Is that okay, Amazon? Is that your preferred?
Anywhere books are sold, anywhere readers want to get their books, that's my preferred bookseller.
Do you have social media where people can find you?
Absolutely. I'm really everywhere. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. I'm out there.
And just then, Lisa Unger? Unger?
Yeah.
That's the best. I don't understand when people do these screen names where they're like, I'm a shadowy knight 42. It's like, just use your name, weirdo.
Sometimes you can't get your name.
That's
like,
true.
I've been on there for so long that my name was available when I signed on to these places. So I think on Instagram, it's L.A. Unger. On Twitter, it's Lisa Unger. And then on Facebook, I think it's author Lisa Unger. And then, of course, my website, lisaunger.com. All links to all of those places can be found there.
All right. Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you.
All right. There you go, Lisa Unger. Thank you very much for coming in. Appreciate it. The book is The Red Hunter. Wherever books are sold, you can buy it. Make sure you go grab yourself a copy. I'll put the link in the description here. Remember, homemadepodcast.com. Reach clients through podcasting. It's easy. Let me help you do that, okay? Give me a ring. If you're listening on Radio St. Pete, stay tuned for Frank Rivera's jazz show coming to you direct from the Music Room in Seminole, Florida. Coming up after that is The Indie Circuit. If you're listening on podcasts, thank you. Go about your day and make sure you rate and subscribe. Keep up to date the things that are happening here at HMB Radio. Very good. Have a great week, everybody. I will talk to you very soon, next week, as a matter of fact. Very good. HMB Radio, Radio St. Pete, Will Koontz. See you later.
Problems. It's human nature to hate problems. But why is that? After all, problems inspire us to mend things, bend things, make things better. That's why so many people work with IBM on everything, from city traffic to ocean plastic, new schools to new energy, flight delays to food safety. Smart loves problems. IBM. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/smart/UK to learn more. Problems. It's human nature to hate problems. But why is that? After all, problems inspire us to mend things, bend things, make things better. That's why so many people work with IBM on everything, from city traffic to ocean plastic, new schools to new energy, flight delays to food safety. Smart loves problems. IBM. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/smart/UK to learn more.